With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone. So regarding today's episode, I'll probably be sharing some parts of it with several friends of mine, but at the same time, I should give a warning that even though the person who wrote the book is a medical professional, the two people discussing it are not. So if you're going to take on board what we discuss, make sure you include your own professional advice as part of that. Enjoy the show.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's happiest podcast network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bookish. I'm George DeMorelis. This is a show where we ask you what's your story and what does it say about you. Today on the show we have comedian, amateur poker player, musician, and all-round great guy, Simon Carter. How are you doing, Simon?
I'm very well, thank you. Just amateur poker playing it up.
Yeah. Look, you were very firm on not to say professional poker player, so I thought I would... Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention professional fighter as well.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, no, I've never made money off that, actually.
Never made money?
No.
Just the only money's in the blood of your enemies.
That's right.
Coating your fists.
I'm sure that the trainer who was my corner man made money.
Yeah?
But I was under 18, so it was just like, just a pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
Just to punch some faces.
Because anyone listening to this might, look, I think it's fine for me to say this. You've said this joke on stage. You don't come across like someone who's done, is it MMA?
Muay Thai.
Muay Thai. So you don't come across like a actual quite rather serious Muay Thai fighter. Like you have the energy of a more, like, you know, more quiet sort of fellow. A more shy, self-restrained kind of guy.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that bodes well for me.
Yeah, I know. That way they'll never see it coming.
That's right. If a fight ever broke out, their guard would be very down if they were going to fight me. Not a large man, and let's say my face is, let's call it young looking. I don't think anybody's scared, which is great, because if anybody was scared, they might stand a chance at all.
Yeah.
And they don't. So.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, you're basically like the white version of that little Asian guy that actually can kill everyone in like Simpsons and stuff.
You see that.
Yeah, that cliche.
Yeah, yeah. The Japanese mafia.
Yeah.
And Homer's like, I want to see what that little guy does. Yeah.
He says, don't know, but you know what he does? It's going to be good.
Yeah. And then he like lets out this primal scream and Homer's like, oh, I missed it.
Classic sound effects, that one. Yeah. Thank you for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
But yeah, so to give a little background on you, I guess, because we've already expressed so much range in you already, I think, in the first 12 seconds of this podcast. Like, who is he?
Exactly. I have too much range that probably nobody knows who I am.
Yeah, because even like your music side of things, you play jazz.
Yep.
Not in a band right now, right?
Right.
So, but on your own. Yep. And it's trombone.
Yep.
Jazz.
That's my main instrument. Yep.
Yeah, which that's cool.
Yeah, man. I'm the only one, baby.
Is it relatively rare here in Melbourne?
To be a trombone jazz player?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, to be a jazz musician in Melbourne is pretty rare in general compared to the other professions. But yeah, trombones, I would say, you know, if you compare to the other instruments, yeah, guitar and saxophone, like, a pretty monstrous. Mm. It's only a handful of top trombone players, you know what I mean? But they're absolute killers.
Oh, they are.
Don't let trombone fool you. Like, they're just as... People are like, oh, trombone can't play fast because you got to use the slide. Incorrect. You just haven't seen a good trombone player play. Like, they play just like a saxophone player. Like, to speed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Impressiveness. It's just a different sound quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was doing a radio show with Jacqueline Mifsud, the comedian.
Yeah.
And she was like, she was bringing up my trombone playing. And she goes, yeah, you do a lot of trombone playing as well. And she goes, and I'm like, that's your impression of what I do? Three slow notes in a row that are a bit stupid sounding? That's, I went to university. I studied at NYU. I have an honors degree.
You had an honors degree in trombone playing.
And you think, that's what you think I'm doing?
Are you telling me you've never done those three notes?
I mean, I probably, no, I have never done those three notes. No, not even on day one was I that shit. No, I've never done that.
I'm picturing like, you know, you've just did a killer solo, you've gotten the energy out, and then just at the end you finish up and you're like, that goes nuts.
Yeah, maybe like as a, you know, a little bit of a ritenuto on the end, build up a nice, you know, a big finish.
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe, you know, you land on the nine or something. But the way Jacqueline didn't go, she went, yeah, trombone, baby. And it, you can't see, but I'm doing really like stupid arm movements.
Yeah.
And Jacqueline is just like, this is what I think you are. Jacqueline's lovely if you're getting the wrong idea.
Yeah, no.
That was the way I perceived what she was doing, just in case anybody's like, this guy hates Jacqueline.
Look, it definitely is sounding like a triggered situation for you. It feels like it wasn't just Jacqueline you were responding to at that moment.
No,
it was the whole history.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
People disparaging your profession.
My entire high school life of just bullies coming up to me going, how's trumpet? And I'm like,
and that's why you do Muay Thai.
That's right. Oh yeah, you also know I can chop you in the throat right now, right? Like I'll play trumpet at your funeral. How about that? How about that?
And not sad trumpet. It's going to be happy trumpet.
Yeah, I don't know if you I don't think you were there, but I was doing a gig and somebody was heckling and I was like, I'm a musician. I'm going to play at your funeral. And I was like, and I'm a jazz musician. It's going to be very disrespectful. So yeah, man, you're on the ball.
You there you go.
Yeah, so you're predicting my
punchlines.
Yeah, that's right.
Comedians.
Yeah, you're on it.
Yeah, no, that's I think that's an interesting thing people might not appreciate much because you don't. Okay, so trombone is your, obviously, it's your heart's instrument.
Yeah.
But you've also got skills in piano.
I play piano a little bit as well. Too. Yeah.
But no, and still quite good, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's just not. It's just not on the same level as trombone. Trombone's just like, that guy knows what's up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you saw me play piano, you'd be like, oh, what are you talking about? Like, you know, you're good at this. This is dope. I mostly use piano for like composition and stuff, but I just haven't put in the man hours on like tech and, you know, just knowing it to the nth degree.
That, right.
The 8-hour days, five years of 8-hour days. You know what I mean?
That's crazy.
Where I've done that on trombone.
You've seen it because like, so you actually went to NYU?
Yeah, just for a summer intensive course. It was just like one unit as part of my degree.
So that's where you get to see like the level of, but I'm like, it's just like, it's almost a laziness part of me. I'm like, obviously there's people love doing it to a degree as well. And yeah. Not just love doing it. They just love working on something, obviously, to that degree. But, like, surely, like, you don't need to do it 8 hours a day for 5 years to get good at something. You know what I mean? Like, is it maybe 3 years?
No.
And then you're just fucking around?
Like, no way. Like, the best of the best will do that often forever. They'll just play all the time. Because the thing that people miss is that when you're playing a jazz solo, what you're trying to do is you're hearing melodies in your head and you have to be so attuned with your instrument and your ability to hear notes and know what those pitches are that you can hear in your brain without hearing them in real life, that you can then sing that melody in your head without making any noise out loud and then reproduce it in your instrument immediately and in the exact notes. So you're actually, it's like thinking of words and talking.
Yeah.
But being not just talking like some idiot, being extremely articulate and being able to communicate with others all at the same time, you have to then be able to create art that people like immediately. Like if somebody was, they said, hey, paint this immediately, like right now, you can't work on it, like now, go, and I'm going to watch, and I'm going to enjoy every brush stroke. And if there's certain brush strokes I don't like or colors I don't like, I'm out, like I'm checking out of this solo. You suck. You know what I mean?
It sounds very high intensity.
It is.
I also feel like it is definitely like one of the more art forms, jazz, where like you got to put in the hours to appreciate how good it is. You know what I mean? Like some things, like anyone can sit and watch a good movie, I feel like, and even a painting to a degree. Obviously, you're going to miss a million nuances, but you can still enjoy it.
Yeah.
But like something like jazz is something where it's like you're just not going to get it almost until you've put in a bit of time to appreciate it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of moments I find in my teaching as a music teacher.
Yeah, forgot to mention that part. There's a music teacher too.
We didn't have any prior conversation about leaving that out on purpose.
Regular Renaissance man, I tell you what.
I'll be telling students, I'll be like, now we want to do this. Now the audience isn't going to know why they enjoy this, but they're going to enjoy this. So this is why we put this in. Like we know, we can discuss it for this reason. They're going to like it. And they're not going to be like, ooh, I can tell he's got the, you know, the sharp nine over the dominant seven chord here. Mm. But they're going to feel, you know, what you're putting in there. You're inferring the blues tradition or whatever, and people enjoy that without being able to explain it themselves. But you hit that note and they're like, sick.
Yeah.
Their brains go, sick, I like this.
So there are elements. So you're saying there that actually you don't need to know that much to still be able to enjoy a nice jazz
right.
thing.
You should need to know nothing. If it's
really?
A good solo, like if it hits home for you.
Yeah, I guess that's, but like as long as you're actually putting the effort to listen to it, I suppose. Some people probably hear jazz and they're like, I don't know. I'm not even going to try, you know, but if you actually just sit there and actually try it. You know, that was sick.
Yeah, man. I mean, maybe if I played more solos like that, people would be relating. I'd be getting more people down to the shows. Jacqueline Mifsud would be on board. Yeah.
This turned into a very jazz focused episode. So like,
hey, man.
Let's do just a quick history before we go into your book as well, just because just like literally dot point thing. Grew up here in Melbourne?
Yeah, Frankston.
Frankston. Studied at?
I went to Monash Clayton.
Clayton. And you were studying music there?
Yep.
And
jazz stream.
And then at the end, you went into New York for 6 months.
We did, it was like a 1 month intensive summer course where you did like every day. 6 days a week, 10 to 6 p.m. Of master classes, and then you did gigs every night.
Jesus
checking
Christ.
Out gigs. It was the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
One of the best experiences I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
Just being around that level of musicianship, so freaking high, and they had like the best jazz musicians come out to do master classes. It was off the charts.
1 month of it.
Yeah,
it's almost like a tease.
I was like ill the whole time. It was really upsetting.
What?
I think it's just because my body was like, here we go. You know what I mean? And it was just firing on all cylinders. And I was just showing up looking absolutely dead. I didn't miss one class.
Yeah.
Like, I was really unwell. But just gutting it. And so I did that just as a 1 month thing.
You went to University of Seoul, New York, and then you came back. You finished off your course?
Finished my course and then decided to do honors. Mm-hmm. Did a thesis in, this could be linking. I did my thesis in, you have to be specific as, are you allowed to swear on this podcast? Yeah. You have to be specific as fuck when you pick a thesis. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I was having shoulder problems at the time, which is the load bearing shoulder when you play trombone, someone that holds the weight of the trombone. Mm-hmm. So my thesis was like the difference between medical professionals treating athletes with left shoulder problems compared to the way they treat musicians with left shoulder problems, brass playing musicians, because it's their load bearing shoulder.
Because what, there'd already been some work done on the right bearing shoulder?
No, because the right would have no real reason to get an injury.
But there would be for people who are the other hand, right?
No, the instruments are always the same hand. There's no left handed. Yep. Yeah, you might have seen some Christina Aguilera clips where the guys are playing trombone and they're playing them backwards. It's because they're fucking idiots in these clips and they don't know how to set up their trombones. I got real mad.
I can't believe there's only one-handed trombones. I'm insulted as a left-hander.
Are you left-handed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I take this to heart. Okay. So.
We finished the degree. We do honors.
You do honors.
Yeah.
You finish the degree and then you traveled with it. Is that what you said?
Yeah. So I moved out onto, it was my goal to audition for some cruise ships and do some cruise ship contracts. So did that. Man, the first one I didn't get. I auditioned, I didn't get it. And the dude, after it, I didn't get the thing. Like I had to play, he sent me, it's like a really insane process. Like it's nuts. They, because they're in different countries. So you have to get up at like 4 a.m. to have the time difference for them. Yeah. They email you the charts because you have to prove that you can read a tune without have ever seen it. Looked at it before. They email it to you. You have to film yourself printing it whilst being on the phone with them. And then you play it immediately along with backing tracks that they email you.
That's hilarious.
And you watch, you film opening the email for the first time, all this shit. It's pretty crazy. And then I auditioned for P&O and got it. Okay. And I got onto the ship, luckily, very luckily for me, that gets paid the most out of any ship.
Yeah.
So I lucked out there.
All right. And so you're actually just cruising around with cruisers just playing in a big band.
Yeah, it was a show band, that one. So trombone, trumpet, two saxophones, and a rhythm section.
And how long would you play for?
We would do three shows a night. Right. So three 45-minute sets.
And then you just kick back the rest of the time.
The rest of the time was nothing.
That's what people bag. I get that people say, I can see why people say cruise ships are bad in terms of like, they say that's where comics go to die and stuff because like you don't do anything else. But like, I could definitely see a few years doing cruise ships would be aight because like then you get paid great and you got so much free time to actually just write or do whatever you want.
Yeah. And when you're in port, you can just get off and travel for free. You live for free, rent free, all your food is free. Like there are a lot of perks.
And you're getting paid good money as well.
Good money. And you have pretty much guaranteed big crowds every night. Yeah. Like in the ship, there was at each end, there was a theater, a full theater, like in the movies. You know what I mean? Mm. But bigger, like a fucking theater.
That's great. Yeah, no.
And like this like panned theater, left to right, huge. And they would pack it out. And you know, you're on stage, like, you know, kind of like the gala. For the comedy festival, and people would just fill up every time. So, it feels like you're so famous.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. It just gets a bit lonely.
And how long would some of these cruises go for?
Spain and surrounding countries was that one. And that was 3 months, but they can go for, like, the other guys in the band were full-timers, so they were just on all the time, and that every year they would get, I'm going to get this wrong, but every year they would get like a month off or something, or 2 months off.
That's not what I meant. I think if that, that's a lot. That's a long, that's they, a long lonely.
They lived there. So that's, that wasn't for me.
Yeah. Like again, I could see that maybe for a year or something could be interesting, but yeah, that's nice. Yeah. So then you just did that. For how many years was that?
I ended up just doing that contract.
Right.
Because, and this is going to lead nicely into the book as well.
Yeah.
Because I ended up getting a lot of pain in my jaw and thinking at the time that it was playing related. It was just getting overwhelming. They put me on painkillers, really strong painkillers, and it was not working.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, do you grind your teeth at night, get a mouth guard, do all this stuff? I did all the stuff, spent so much money. Mitigating the pain, mm-hmm. but not even close to getting rid of it. So
were you still playing during this time?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So finished up there and went home, and then didn't accept another one because I was like, I got to get this sorted.
And the pain was pretty full on.
Yeah. And I've had that extreme pain in my jaw, and shoulder and hip from kickboxing, or at least I thought it was from kickboxing at the time, for the past 8 years, just extreme pain. And I actually haven't spoken about it, like, because it's sad. Like, and when I tell people...
you still have it now. No, you're saying at that point then.
For all the way up until last year.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It was just extreme pain, and you tell people about it every time you catch up with them. Their first question is, how's all your pain?
Mm.
And when your answer every single time is, it's worse. It's dog shit. I'm declining steadily in my life. I'm losing everything.
Jesus.
In my life. I haven't played trombone. I can't fight. I can't lift weights. I've had to change my diet because I can't chew and make it through the whole meal. I can't hang out in the comedy audience for the full two brackets because I'm smiling too much and I can't bear it. I have to go home.
Fuck me.
Yeah. And I wouldn't tell anybody because
I've known you for way longer than that.
Right.
And you were suffering through that pain that whole time.
Yeah. Just not saying or not expressing. And yeah. It was the hardest thing in my life. And so what would happen is I would just be dying at a gig, and I just tell people, "Oh, I got to get running." I just wouldn't say why, and then go. And yeah, for so long, everybody was treating the physical symptoms like, "Oh, your jaw hurts. Problem with the jaw. We got to figure out. We got to treat the jaw. Something's going on." Or I hurt myself. Air quotes. I hurt myself kickboxing. I thought because I hurt myself while I was kickboxing. So obviously, you think, "Oh, yeah.
It's kickboxing.
It's kickboxing. I got to stop kickboxing, right?"
Yeah.
One day I was training, quite a stressful training sesh, and I'm getting yelled at, as you do. Like they yell to motivate you. That's just what they do. We're men. We yell.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I couldn't kick on my left side. Couldn't lift up my leg anymore. Nothing happened. No injury. It wasn't a kick, and I went, "Oh, something happened." It was just, "Hey, we don't think so anymore." Body just went, "Nah." And then my left shoulder did the same thing. And my coach was like, "Kick." And I was like, "Something's wrong." And he's like, "All right, well, punch, you pussy." And I was like, "Something's wrong with that too now."
Right.
And they thought I was faking. They were like, "Come on." And I was like, "I've been training my ass off here for 5 years, never took a day off in my life. What makes you think I'm faking?" So I was
such
like,
positive. Such a positive environment.
For yeah. Dealing with,
yeah.
And they were like, "Go." And I was like, "I'm sitting down." Like, yeah. I know that something is very seriously wrong. You can yell all you want, but I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And then spent the next 8 years looking for what was wrong. And I saw every doctor, and I had surgeries, and I had blood injections, cortisone injections, like steroid injections, into the joint, into the muscle, all the stuff, physios, dry needling, like just going out for torture, all the things that you can imagine. Somebody might be listening to this podcast being like, "Oh man, he should have tried acupuncture." I did.
You did everything.
Why didn't Eastern, he try osteo? Western. I did do osteo.
Like, yeah?
Everything in the world that was physical.
Yeah, yeah. For all these different things.
Yep.
And so did they all happen at roughly the same time, or was it like the injury with kickboxing and then you went and did your music and then that kicked in as well? Is that how it worked?
Great question. It was when I was 12, I really hurt my neck. Nothing happened. I just turned. I was looking behind me.
Yeah.
Neck done.
Mm-hmm.
I've had neck pain for the rest of my life.
What?
Yeah. Forever. Then I'm at 19. This kickboxing thing happens. Now I've got shoulder and hip pain. Never goes. It's there forever. Then I'm doing the cruise contract and I'm playing trombone, jaw. Jaw forever. All of these.
So each one was cumulative on top of the next one, which was a few years apart, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But the thing is, it was like I would go to get something, you know, for a massage or whatever. It would feel mildly better. And then one of my other things would just be the main focus of my brain now, like that we hadn't worked on. So if I get a neck massage, it's like, yeah, I guess that kind of helped. And now like I can feel my shoulder way more.
Yeah.
So you go around the circle and it's forever. Like you can't, there's no way you can get rid of it.
Jesus. So, and like this is, went on for years and you tried everything with all of them.
Yeah.
From drugs to.
Yeah, drugs. Yep. Physical doctors.
Like steroid injections and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And even went Eastern and you did acupuncture. And
yeah. Yeah. It was like, you know, mostly Western.
Yeah.
But yeah, other stuff as well. You know, going to hot yoga, trying to, you know, whatever.
That would have been my first, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's the one you'd think like yoga would be the solution, but not.
Did a lot of yoga. Yoga helped, but not to a degree where I could ever return to anything that I loved.
So that's what these pains were so bad that you had to actually stop the stuff you were doing.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
This podcast has taken such an extreme turn.
Yeah, yeah. And like,
oh my God.
Exactly. And that's why I just, you know, you don't bring this up just day to day.
Yeah.
Because it just got sad. How are you? Still bad. Like, stop asking me. But people are concerned about you and they want to. So I just stopped talking. I just stopped bringing it up.
Yeah.
And I started doing comedy after the cruise jaw thing. So that was when I just was in the world of, I don't talk about this.
Mm.
So you would have, I did comedy after. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You're just a big bundle of pain that whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yep. Absolutely.
We're up to date and now let's lead into, this makes more sense now. And also, yeah, I really want to, this book sounds so interesting to me.
Yep.
And it sounds like you've got a very personal story attached to it. So your book of choice for today is?
The Mind-Body Prescription by Dr. John E. Sarno.
Right. And it's a health book about how to treat pain. essentially, yep. written back in the early 90s.
Yeah, and it was John Sarno is a he's a traditional doctor, like as opposed to a doctor of psychology. Mm. He is a GP, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he wrote it, which is very interesting because what we're about to talk about is rejected by the vast, vast majority of GPs.
Today?
Yes.
Still?
Yes. And most of them don't even know this is a thing. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to my GPs after reading the book, and I'm like, what do you know about mind-body syndrome or tension myositis syndrome? And they're just like, what? What's that? And I'm like, no shit. Like, you go into your GP and you go, my shoulder hurts, and they go, sick, here is the shoulder pill.
Yeah.
And you take that. And what happens? It masks the symptom of pain, but it does not address the root cause. Mm. And then what your brain does then is it finds another way in your body to express the same pain.
Well, so let's summarize, actually, because that's what you're saying there. The fundamental thesis of the book, what's it saying exactly?
It's saying that it lists, it's saying that majority of physical discomfort in your body, whether it's pain, skin breakouts, difficulty with digestion, headaches, anything like that, chronic pain, is not because of a physical issue. There's nothing structurally wrong with you. And the reason is it is because you have unresolved emotions and trauma, you know, traumatic things that you haven't looked into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's like, yeah, like that's actually, it sums it up in 1 second. Yeah. And like specifically, I guess like obviously any trauma is emotional trauma. And is it like from any period in time, or is it like something which you don't remember maybe, or is it something you do remember, or it's just, so it is psychology in a sense. It's saying you've got something wrong from years back that you just haven't confronted.
Yes. And it could be anything. Like people hear trauma and they go, oh, I don't have any trauma. Because when people think of trauma, they think of the big ones, the big terrifying ones, you know, abuse or sexual things, and, the huge level trauma, you know, high scale.
Yeah.
But trauma can also be on any scale. It can be anything that your brain finds difficult to process and therefore hasn't.
Yeah.
It hasn't processed it.
Yeah.
And it's stuck.
Year 11 maths, that can be trauma. No,
yeah, man. I know. Whatever you don't get. Yeah.
No,
I don't get how the world is spinning, but like the sun stays in the same spot. This is trauma, baby.
This is trauma, man. Yeah. It's hurting my neck.
how come I can see the moon in the day but not the sun at night?
But no, I actually do know what you mean. You're essentially saying, again, we're talking from an emotional point of view rather than a factual thing. And you're talking about anything which it might actually seem unreasonable, I'm guessing, to maybe – or you feel like it's unreasonable for me to even call this a thing that doesn't make sense, but it's like – your mom didn't pick you up on time and you're like, why didn't that happen? And you haven't like dealt with that.
To a degree. Yep. Like, you know, maybe you were left there for hours in the rain and, you know, she didn't pick you up for the last 3 weeks and promised specifically that she would be there.
Mm.
And then, you know, it turned out she wasn't there because of something that, you know, you read into as she didn't care about you or care enough to be on time. And as a result, so this is how trauma can manifest in the body, and your brain is doing it as a defense mechanism. Your brain thinks that by causing you pain, it's helping because your subconscious knows everything about you. Mm-hmm. It's been there the whole time and it's got it all. It's got it all stored, and it's doing it as a defense mechanism because it thinks that it can see the difficult emotions, the terrifying emotions, the traumatic emotions that haven't been expressed, and your inner rage that has built up over your life that isn't in conscious mind, like you don't feel day to day, but it's there as a result. It sees those emotions trying to break free into conscious mind, and your subconscious is terrified that these are going to get out.
Yeah.
So what it does is when you have difficult emotions, like if you're going through something, it will flare up your pain in your body or give you breakouts or make it difficult to digest, whichever it is your body's chosen for you as your distraction.
Mm-hmm.
It will flare that up so that you lose your concentration on the emotions and you go, oh, man, my shoulder hurts. And your brain's sitting there going, excellent. He'll never process, he'll never address these terrifying thoughts because it is safer for him, for his shoulder to hurt a little, because he can continue through life without bringing this up.
Yeah.
It is safer to do that than for him to be breaking down at work, crying over difficult traumas of his past.
The thing is, like, that's actually true to a degree, like, as in terms of there are situations where you can't, like, and that's why it happened in the first place. It's almost a defense mechanism that comes up because at that point, maybe, yeah, you, especially like maybe not the big trauma, but a lot of traumatic stuff, you can't deal with it at that time because there's so much going on that you have to segment it.
Yeah.
But then obviously, if you don't deal with it ever, yeah, that's what can, so that's why I don't actually want to be like, oh, it's bad. You should just deal with it all straight out, because, like, the reason it exists is, I think, is like, it actually can be useful at the time. But yeah, like, because if your world's falling apart, it doesn't help on top of that for you to have a mental breakdown sometimes. It actually is good for you to almost segment and then have that mental breakdown later when everything isn't also falling apart.
Yeah, well, the brain, the human brain has evolved to keep us safe, not happy.
Yeah.
So it's trying to keep us alive. What you've got to do in order to do this is you've got to, you say, have your mental breakdown later. What you've got to do is not have your mental breakdown later. What you've got to do is you've got to address what's really going on and think it out.
Yeah. I'm being simplistic, I know.
But there are, like, all these methods that if I read this book a bunch of years ago, I'd probably be like, whatever. You know what I mean? Because we've been sort of
conditioned to not discredit this stuff.
Yeah. And even GPs are discrediting this stuff. And what happens is I've joined a Facebook group and they all do this, the same stuff from this book. They all talk about, everybody posts their story. We all have the same story. Everybody's story is, I did all the physical stuff for 10 years. I spent $20,000 and I had enough. And I saw this method and I thought, I've got nothing left to try. I'm at the end of my rope and there's nothing. This is all that's left and I'm desperate. I tried the book. I'm better.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay. Like, the fact that you're sitting here right now and you're telling me this, obviously, I'm doing my classic population size of one and my whole experience, because this sounds legit. Like, and
it
I can.
Is.
Yeah. And the body does manifest the things of the brain. And I definitely have felt that myself. What are some of the things it says? Obviously, people should go read the book if they want the full detailed account. But, like, read what's the kind book. Of stuff? Like, is it talking about just like therapy, I'm guessing?
Not really. Like,
no. Okay.
Like, kind of. And my mum's a psychologist. I've spoken to her about it. And she's like, yeah, this is like a lot of similar stuff. But I've also tried some therapy with a normal psychologist. And it just felt like we were doing EMDR, which is like where you look at it's an eye sensory thing, which I don't want to get too deep into it, but when you have traumatic events, they apparently get stuck in your amygdala and they don't. Your amygdala is the part of your brain that sends different senses to different sections of your brain. So the imagery stuff goes to the imagery part of the brain. Mm-hmm. And then it's like the guy in the mail room who sends out the mails in the right places. Now, if something's traumatic, it doesn't get processed. It stays there. And what happens is when it is getting processed is when you're in REM sleep at night. Mm-hmm. And what happens when you're in REM sleep at night is your eyes are darting back and forth, left to right. Mm-hmm. And that helps it process. And they found this life hack where if you look at this dot on a screen or a psychologist is moving their finger back and forth and you follow it whilst focusing on the traumatic experience, you're manually tricking your brain into processing this experience.
No way.
Yeah. And there's been a shit ton of evidence behind it, and it is one of the most backed and supported factual.
Shut the fuck up! What is this thing?
Yeah, EMDR.
You're dropping some serious bombs on me here.
Yeah, man.
Because that sounds, again, it's like I love mechanical solutions to psychological problems, I guess, in a way, because that's what you're talking about right now. You're talking about like, we're backdooring this stuff. We're manually forcing it. So I love this so much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's it called again?
EMDR.
EMDR. I'm definitely going to have a look at that. That's fascinating. Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Okay. So you did that though, and you didn't think it was...
I felt that I believe that there's incredible merit for EMDR, but I felt what was happening for me specifically was something different. Mm-hmm. So the book I read is the first on this subject, and that's why I've chosen this one specifically. There are a number of other books that have furthered it, but they've all based themselves on this original book. Mm-hmm. Unlearn Your Pain by Howard Schubiner. Also very, very good and a bit more advanced in the thinking.
As in like you would probably need to understand it better for starting here and then read that. Is that what you mean?
You could do either.
Yeah.
Okay. I just think that John Sarno is the pioneer.
Okay.
And there were sections in his book that aren't in other books and it was amazing. I'll do an example in a sec. But the part that helped me is this new guy who's writing his own book now. His name's Alan Gordon, and he holds a podcast called Tell Me About Your Pain. And his process is your traumatic experiences and people who are perfectionistic and who have really high expectations of themselves, too high, start to get themselves living in a state of fight or flight, like all the time.
Right.
Because they're always on. Everything must be perfect. You're at work. You kick the crap out of yourself if you make a mistake. If you don't, for us, if you do a gig and you bomb, you're hard on yourself. You suck. Like, the hell was that? You're never going to make it. Why are you still doing this? You know?
I feel like that's almost a healthy response.
Well, yeah, that's what I thought too. But these are all fear thoughts. Hmm. And what happens is you get yourself into a fight or flight where, you know, you're primed all the time because you want to make sure nothing goes wrong. And if you're primed all the time, you've got all your stuff firing all the time. And when you're in fight or flight, it's because your body thinks you're in danger. Right? It's kind of like the eye hack thing where manually doing the hack. If you're manually keeping yourself primed all the time, your body goes, oh, he's on the Serengeti and a lion's coming. Because we're still underdeveloped in our brain. Mm. We've still got that part. Like something goes off and adrenaline goes insane.
Yeah, I remember reading about that once. It's like we are treating situations now with the same intensity that we were treating that stuff back then. And obviously that's crazy because, it's like – you're getting a lot more of those almost now. Like those back then, you get them now and then, but it's like, you're like, oh, I missed the deadline. It's like something like that's happening every day.
Yes.
And your body's treating it like a life or death situation because it doesn't know different.
Exactly. And what happens when your body thinks you're in danger is it sends out the danger signal. And for me, that was chronic pain. So it's my body saying, it's trying to talk to me. It's trying to say something is very wrong and you're not getting this. So I'm going to make this hurt real bad. Yeah. So there's two approaches. One is I'm trying to send you a message that something is wrong. And the other one is I'm trying to distract you from the scary emotional trauma.
Right. So you're saying that there's two different ones.
Yeah.
That are kind of almost completely different in a way.
Yeah, I guess.
One's more like you're just in a very stressful situation.
Yep.
And you're kind of maybe overreacting to it and you're a bit too tense.
Yes.
Basically. And the other one's like you got some shit you got to sort through.
Yes.
Which you probably do with both, but with one it's very different to the other. Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, and they'll come up at different times. You've got to figure out what's going on for you.
And what, you're saying you had both?
Yep. Oh, I mean, everybody does.
Okay.
We all have trauma. We all have something, you know, multiple things. And the thing is that was really funny for me, when you're going through this book, it goes right down everything that you felt discomfort with, like everything. It took, you know, it was very difficult work and it took a long time to relive all this shit.
Like what do you mean by discomfort?
Traumatic, you know, something, you know, and everything in detail.
Like from your childhood or whatever?
Your whole life.
Your whole life. Yep. Any time you ever felt bad?
Well, yeah, to a degree. Like, not I dropped my ice cream, but like...
It could be. You dropped your ice cream if you felt bad enough about it, right?
If you don't, you know, that's not... When you're writing down these things, that's not going to spring to mind. You know what I mean? But it's like, big breakup, thought she was the one.
Mm-hmm.
She got away. And that whole relationship was traumatic because of these reasons. And then you break it down. This in that relationship was rough. You know what I mean? This person died when I was young. You know, all this stuff. And then there's also the huge ones, obviously, which I don't have, that will go down. And then you look at the biggest ones and when they were. And this was one of the biggest catalysts for me. I could find a big, what was to me, traumatic experience at every major injury.
Really?
Yep. And I was like, my body was saying, you haven't processed this. You're ignoring this. And we terrified. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm guessing, does it have a guide like to help you with this part, of, like the part where you're writing down the things that cause you discomfort, whatever?
Yep.
Does it kind of be like, and be honest and like, here's some tips on like, go through your years or something?
Yeah.
Like-
it is extremely clear.
Yeah.
Yep. They hold your hand through the whole thing.
Yep.
They need to. And yeah, they've got all these different techniques. That is in Sarno's book. Mm-hmm. And it's also in Schubiner. Howard Schubiner has another really clear one. And there's a thing called ISTDP that Schubiner does in Unlearn Your Pain. And it's like you have to go back mentally to the time of the traumatic event and relive it in your mind. And literally, like, if you were a kid and you couldn't yell back, you know, you just took on verbal abuse or whatever, you go back and you yell back what you needed to yell back at the time with your current adult brain.
Really?
You express what you needed to express.
Out loud?
Yeah. You can write it, but they say out loud is best. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing that. Man, brutal. And then when I saw my psychologist, she's like, so what have you been doing? And I was like, I've been doing some ISTDP. And she goes, oh, so you've had a psychologist before this. And I was like, no. And she goes, you were doing ISTDP on your own? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, oh, my God. How was that? And I was like, brutal. That's why I came to a psychologist now, because it was fucking brutal.
That's, yeah. So you're basically doing the thinking of the perfect comeback. But then actually going back and saying it. But like, no, making light of it again. But you did that on your own in a room.
I did.
Potentially dangerous, to be honest. Like, I don't know.
But the effects that I got from it were amazing. So I don't know if I just did it right and I got lucky and I didn't ruin my own brain, you know. But it was phenomenal results. Yeah. And, you know, it usually ends in, you know, mass breakdowns. But people are afraid of crying, especially males. We're not really allowed to. But crying is processing emotion, difficult emotion. That's what crying is. So when you are crying, you are processing. Like, don't be – if you're listening, males, I know this all of George's listeners are definitely the ladies. But there's any males out there, get to crying. And I'm a tough Muay Thai fighter. Take it from me. I'm the biggest man in the room. Every room I'm in, I'm the biggest, strongest man.
I can kill anyone
and I'm a jazz aficionado. I cry.
I play jazz at their funerals.
Sometimes I cry. Yeah, and I play.
I'll kill them and play jazz at their funerals. I
play jazz at my victims' funerals. So there's that. And then what Alan Gordon says is, he says that it's not necessary frequently for a lot of people to do that extremeness, you know, of ISTDP. He says you've got to retrain your brain because it's been proven that the way we connect with our body through our mind is through neural pathways. Mm-hmm. And if we're taking those neural pathways with a lens of danger, like, you know, I'm unsafe, you know, in this situation emotionally, then it will create pain and it will get used to that. And then the next time you have difficult emotions, pain comes on because it's your body's autonomic response. Mm-hmm. So what you got to do is you have to do the one that I found most helpful. It's going to sound, it's funny because I've been talking to men about this and they're like, I ain't doing that, sucks. You know, men don't have feelings, we don't allow feelings.
Yeah.
And then I tell women about it and they're like, preach, you know, that sounds amazing. I'm going to do that every day. What it is self-talk. It's like all those books. It's like the way you talk to yourself. You know, we treat ourselves like crap. Like, why wouldn't we treat ourselves like someone we care about the most? Someone we want. We have to talk to yourself sometimes, they say, as if you're the, you know, 10-year-old version of yourself. If you bombed on a gig, 10-year-old you wouldn't come up and go, man, you suck. The hell was that? You'd go, hey, man, I know this is, you know, I know this must be difficult. Like, you see yourself as a good comedian and you do this all the time and, you know. You know, people will be like, I ain't a pussy. But also, like, your subconscious is a pussy. It is. It's a 10-year-old boy. You walk around.
That might be the best line I've ever heard.
You might not be. You might think you're tough as nails, bro.
Your subconscious is a pussy.
Your subconscious has seen everything that you do. It's watched you when you cry. It sees you at night when you feel alone, falling asleep. It remembers when that person said, no, I don't want to go on a date with you. And it's scared. It is scared. I don't care if you're not scared and you ride a Harley Davidson. You're scared.
That's the best.
You can deny it all you want.
Your subconscious is a pussy.
Absolutely.
And there's no getting around it.
And you need to help it out.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you got to do is you send yourself messages of safety. Here's the best example I got for you. I was last year going through a breakup and did not want to go through this breakup. Didn't want to break up. Feeling very unstable in the relationship. Like, I know this could end and I think it will, and she's just not addressing it. And I'm driving home, having these emotions, mind's going a mile a minute, and all of a sudden, my bicep tendon in my shoulder, right where it used to hurt from kickboxing, the exact same pain, the exact same spot, flares up uncontrollably. And I say out loud to myself, because I do talk to myself a lot, yeah. I go, oh, fuck this, man. Like, I've got all this shit going on, and now my shoulder's killing me. And I go, oh, shit. My shoulder's killing me because I got this shit going on and it's going, no, focus here. Focus here. Yeah. Don't worry about this. Focus. I can tell this is getting too much. This is getting overwhelming for you. So just look over here, right? And I say that out loud. I do the self-talk. I go, I see you. I see what you're doing. I'm talking to my primitive brain, the scared pussy. I see you. I know what you're doing. I see through your defense mechanism, rendering it moot. I know why you're doing it. I know you're trying to protect me, but you, this time, are making an error. There is no physical threat to me in this car. I haven't done anything physically dangerous with my shoulder. I'm not swinging it around. Nobody punched me. I'm just driving my car. I know you're scared, and there's no physical threat to me, and as a result, I need to feel no physical pain. And I said all of this out loud, gone. Shoulder pain, gone.
Right.
Just went away.
So, okay. That's interesting because it doesn't sound like you actually dealt with the traumatic part of things.
Exactly. And that is Alan Gordon's perspective. He says you don't necessarily have to go down this traumatic road. You have to send, because you've been living in fight or flight and you always think you're in danger, you have to send your brain messages of safety so it will stop taking the lens of danger painful neural pathway and it will start taking the lens of safety normal neural pathway, so your mind body connects without pain, knowing you are safe physically.
I almost love that because it's like, lads, don't worry, you don't have to confront your trauma. We'll just fix the physical part.
But you're you know, lads, you've got to talk to yourself as if your subconscious is a pussy. So still, you've still got to do this.
Yeah, but it's just you're not dealing with your in that case, you're not dealing with the emotional issues of the breakup. You're literally just dealing with the pain in your shoulder.
Well, that's where the traumatic stuff might get you when you're 50 and you have a heart attack and it's too late. You can't talk yourself through that. But if you've got things like skin breakouts, digestion, chronic pain that has no physical reason, you know, and most chronic pain has no physical reason. They've done studies in people's back where they do back scans and people have bulging discs and disc degeneration, etc. And people see that on an MRI. And they go, that's the reason for my back pain. Mm. It isn't. Because they've done scans on people, and people who have disc degeneration also have no pain. There are people with no disc degeneration who have pain. Mm. So when doctors get the scans of 100 people, and some of them have stuff and some of them don't, they can't point to the scan and tell you who's got pain. Therefore, evidently and scientifically, these are not indicators of pain, and therefore those changes in your back are normal human changes and are not causing pain.
Right. Like, obviously, to a degree with all that stuff. Like,
I'm shrugging right now. Like,
you're
maybe.
You're shrugging hard because I maybe. Just don't. Look, my concern is obviously because, you're speaking from a fully lived experience of dealing with this pain. Because you're telling me you did that, and when you said the results were extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are we talking the pain just went away?
Yeah, so.
Like, as in over a few weeks? Or you're like, you screamed at the 11-year-old you who'd wronged you, and you were just sweet.
So I've had differing things for differing parts, and different things have worked to different degrees. What happens is you can't just flick a switch and now you're all good. Mm. The pain did go away. Later, I've had more difficult emotions come up, and that pain will come again. But I do the thing, gone. Now, what happens is I'm retraining my brain. Eventually, that will become the norm. The main one that got me, and this is the example I alluded to earlier that I was going to bring up.
That little crumb you put in,
Oh, baby.
Okay, we're ready.
This was huge. Okay. I was driving to that girlfriend's house while we were still in the sweet relationship I didn't want to end, and I was enjoying my drive listening to this book on audio. Great times, by the way. She's not listening, but if she's listening, great times.
So, was this the point where in the relationship where things were difficult or before that?
They were great.
Okay.
They were phenomenal. Okay. So, I'm driving, listening on audio. Now, for 8 years, I was taking a strong pain medication that was just helping a little bit, and I had to wear a mouth guard at night to mitigate pain. It helped a little, and I hate taking medication. So, I would try to wean myself off medication all the time and just see if I could handle it. No.
Jesus.
Unbearable. Can't chew one time. Like, ridiculous pain.
What?
Can't, if I didn't have the mouth guard, like, life over. The next day is a write-off. Like,
oh my God, that level of pain.
Outrageous amount of pain. Like, I can't even tell you. And so what I'm doing is I would then have to take the drugs again. I would just go, hey, I can't handle this. So I'm driving. I'm listening to Dr. John Sarno, Mind Body Prescription. And there's a question answer section towards the end of the book. And he's like, he reads out people's questions and he answers. Somebody's question was, if one of the things that he says is you must repudiate the fact that there is anything physically wrong with you, you must be certain. You must say, I've had all the scans. You've got to get all the scans and make sure, obviously.
Yeah. That's a key point I think that people need.
Key. Key. If you've got pain and you get scans and there's tumors, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't think your way out of that. That's something different. He lists in the book what is not tension myositis syndrome. So if you've got those, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. So the person goes, if I'm doing my physio exercises that are related to helping my, let's say, shoulder, and I've got tension myositis syndrome, it's the mind thing, should I keep doing the shoulder exercises? And Sarno says, no, you must stop the exercises because while you're doing them, you're reaffirming to your brain that there is something wrong and I need these exercises. And therefore, it will think, my distraction defense mechanism therapy is working and I will continue, right? I will proceed because they believe it to a degree. And when that happened, when he said that out loud, I go, I got to come off these drugs. Got to come off these drugs. Bang, my jaw goes to a 10 out of 10 pain. That's my subconscious going, no, 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 no. Do not come off those drugs. You need them. Hurt, 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 pain, pain, pain. Right? And I go, I see you. I see you in my jaw. I do not need this because I haven't done anything. I've just had thoughts. Just had some thoughts. I see straight through. It went down. The next morning, I stopped taking my drugs. There's no pain. It's gone because I now know I've seen through the defense mechanism, rendering it moot. I now know that I don't need it. It was painful for a little bit and I went, oh, no, I don't need this. I don't need it. I see it was like very minimum. Thought it down. I haven't been on drugs ever since. Gone. I don't need them. I wake up fine. I don't need my mouth guard anymore either. Gone. Because of the knowledge I've seen through it.
I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
Right? As in, I feel like I'm going to have to put a warning at the start of this episode about like doctor's advice and all that. But it does sound like what you're saying though. It doesn't sound unreasonable. Like as in terms of you've done the scans. There's no clear reason why this is happening. So, and on top of that, you've got the pain coming at moments where it's like this isn't related to a physical thing. So you've got like you have a history of proving, in quotation marks, that it's not a physical thing.
Yeah.
So that's helped you then come to this conclusion about the fact that it's not physical. So I feel like that's an important point as well to put towards people that like, you know, you did the work to confirm that it wasn't a physical thing, that, or at least not an obvious physical, because anyone can always find something. It's probably this, but like but you've confirmed that if it's not clear cut, essentially, then there's more chance that maybe, it's go down this path, but we're also at the, let's say the more problematic part here, because like obviously to tell someone to throw away their painkiller medication or whatever.
Oh yeah, you know, don't just throw it away. If you're coming off pain medication, you got to wean yourself off it. Do it with the help of a medical professional. Mm. Don't just, you know, be hearing some enormously buff, strong white man on a on a thing.
On a podcast.
Yeah. But.
This isn't Joe Rogan.
Hey, yeah, what up? Yeah. I got your spinning kicks. Definitely. But in this book, Mind Body Prescription, they have all these things saying, hey, these are the precautions, like do this, do that, get the scans, make sure, like be safe. All the things are in there. So hopefully this is just a hype for the book rather than you to alter your entire life, but read the book.
Well, no, that's the point.
Like all those safety measures are in there.
Yeah. That's great. No, because I definitely think that people don't appreciate how much your mental state impacts your body, like in a way that people don't.
It's insane because people today are rejecting the fact because they're saying, no, your thoughts can't affect pain. It's got to be structural. Apparently, at one point in history, they were going to go one way or the other, structural or psychological, and they went structural. And I think it has a lot to do with being paired with big pharmaceuticals and being able to make all that money, baby.
Yeah, you can make a lot more. But also, I think it's it's easy to measure and deal with for a lot of people to be like, yes, we can measure. Oh, yeah, it's because of this disc here, this thing here. But it's like... Yeah.
Especially people who are afraid to address what's happened.
And everyone has been their whole...
Yep. And they don't want to address it. They don't want to believe. And they don't want to go down difficult traumas. So they'll just ignore. And they'll be like, nah, man, that can't happen. But the proof is that the mind can affect your body in every single day. You know, you ever see somebody you got a crush on and you blush? You know what I mean? It's somebody scare you and your heart rate spike immediately. They didn't do anything to you. They didn't put anything hot on you to make your heart rate spike. It was all thoughts.
Your
thoughts did. They didn't even touch you. Man, you ever been like, you know, you broke up with someone like 8 years ago and you're like, oh, man, you're like desperately in love with them. And you're like, oh, man, I'm going to look up them on Instagram and just see what's up. You know what I mean? And you look it up and you're like, oh, it still hurts. I'm still not over this. Why? You know, it's only a photo. It's because of all the memories and the difficultness of losing that are elicited by that photo. And you feel it physically.
Yeah.
It's a physical reaction. Why wouldn't it come through in pain? Why is pain off limits to you?
Yeah, it's got everything else. You blush, your heart rate goes up, you feel the gut, you feel the tension, you feel that. Why wouldn't you feel pain?
Why wouldn't you feel pain? Why wouldn't you have difficulty with your skin? Why wouldn't you have digestion that's just tricky? I'll tell you, because you would.
And like you said, for you, it was like, it does sound like maybe there was a bit of traumatic stuff there, but not like... the big T, the obvious ones, but like still maybe stuff to do with loss or abandonment or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And you, as you say, like from that, you know, a lot of stuff in the formative years, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that is the most, you know.
Well, that's when you're most open, I think. And then getting older is almost just closing everything off. Okay, this is enough trauma for me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be open anymore. I've learned my lesson.
Right? Right? Yeah. And then, you know. People have all these theories and stuff of people who've been married and divorced. They go into another marriage and, you know, they're just not, you know, they're just like, yeah, they're just a bit more mundane about it. In term, you know, maybe they still love the person, but comparatively to the original marriage, you know what I mean? There's a difference because you've had that loss and your safety brain, the one that's evolved to try and keep you safe, is like, all right, well, let's be a little safer this time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. To hold you back. Sad, yeah, like... So it's like the first cut's the deepest because you actually don't let another one go as deep.
That's right.
it's not because of any other reason.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad, but understanding.
Understand a bit. And if you can understand that, maybe you can break through that barrier and then be open again.
And then you can feel everything again.
Yeah. Just to get cut back down their life. Just so you can go back to your therapist and go through the trauma.
Again and again.
Read another book. Your jaw hurts.
It's worth it, though, because you get to feel that stuff.
Better to have loved and lost.
Yeah. 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 I can definitely agree with that. Cool. Well, yeah. I guess that's kind of – this has been a lot of fun. Usually I'm, like, unpacking how, like, the book – subtle ways it might have impacted you, but you're very
– I knew the book would handle it, like me just talking about it.
Oh, man. It's so – yeah. I mean, we could sit here and talk about it. 10 hours. Like, as in the power of intention and stuff as well. This all like almost ties, but that's a whole different topic. So I won't even go into that.
Definitely.
But from a physical point of view, this is the most nuts and bolts actually example of how the mind can impact the physical reality, I guess, in a way that everyone can understand.
That's right. And I mean, there's books like, you know, The Secret and stuff, which was like gangbusters. I haven't read it. And when people hear about it, they're like, yeah, that's some hokey shit. Like,
yeah.
Put out your intention and it will come back. Like,
that's why I'm trying. Yeah, let's not go down that path.
Yeah, obviously, like, you know, that's true to a degree, but you got to really, you just got to work really hard.
Yeah. And like, I think that's a case of you're training your subconscious to focus on the things you like by every day telling yourself that, and then it will actually help you. So yeah. I can understand how it could aid.
They're masking what's really happening with something else.
Yeah. Like as in, well, it's kind of, you're using just flowery things.
By the book.
But yeah.
Feel
but
like nice.
As in the idea of every day waking up and be like, I'm going to get this. It actually would probably help your brain focus on that anyway, where the universe then metaphysically creates it. But your one, I think everyone can kind of
understand a bit more. This is scientific and it's been backed
with
research, evidence-based research.
And trauma, we know like when stuff sucks, you feel it in you. So like-
In your body physically.
Yeah. No, that's it's great. So yeah, I'm gonna be telling people about this book.
Please do. Yeah. Because even if you have like, you know, headaches, what do you think headaches are? Nobody did anything to your head. Nobody punched you in the head. Like I kickboxed and after the fight, my head really hurt. It wasn't because I got punched in it.
Yeah.
Right? But when you have headaches, just come on at work. Why? You're not doing anything dangerous. Like you're just in an office and you're just stressed the fuck out and your brain's going, hey, here's a distraction. That's what headaches are.
Just a distraction.
There's nothing wrong with your head.
Okay. That's a huge thing to drop.
Yeah.
Just at the end of the episode.
Read this
book. That we can cure headaches because that's migraines and stuff.
Yes, migraines too. This is all covered in this book.
Oh my God.
And people are going to be hearing me. I know you're listening to my stupid voice right now and you're like, this guy. Or maybe you're sitting there going, man, this guy dropping some truth bombs.
Yeah.
I'm hoping. But, you know, you might be like, this guy's just full of it, man. And he's just some spiritual hippie. I'm not. I did 10 straight years of searching for the structural Western medical GP doctor thing, and none of it worked because there was nothing structurally wrong with me.
Yeah.
And we were treating the wrong thing. And, oh, this is the big thing to include. It's not all in your head. People go, oh, it's all in your head. You're nuts. No, it's not. It's in your nervous system, which is attached to your body. It is in your body. It's real. It's not fake pain that your mind has conjured. It is real pain. I believe you that this pain is real. My pain is real. I've felt it. I'm not trying to cut you down.
All pain is nerves firing. So they're still firing.
All pain is real.
Yeah.
If you have pain, it's real. You ain't making it up. I know that. And so does the guy in the book. So we're not trying to cut you down by saying, hey, you're nuts. You're just a psycho. No, you aren't. This is everybody has this, whether they admit it or not, to some degree. I had it to an extreme degree. But if you've got discomfort, this book is for you.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't think we can end it anywhere nicer than that.
Beautiful.
So, I mean, thank you very much for being on and sharing that stuff.
I hope I didn't sound too preachy. Hopefully I'm helpful, but I've had a lot of pushback when I know the answer. You know, it's so difficult.
And you've earned it. I feel like with the pain.
Oh, thank you.
Side of things. You know what I mean? Like you had 10 years of that. That sounds like hell. And I met you and you didn't do, you stopped the kickboxing and then you stopped the music. So this pain.
Yeah.
You've earned the right to be a bit like preachy because like this stuff full impacted you and you went past it. So I'm with you.
And the reason I'm preaching is because I know how long it took me to find the answer. And I know there are people out there who don't have this answer. And if one person hears this and reads the book and gets relief from pain, then fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because man, that was not a fun existence to have.
I'm going to read it.
You should.
Yeah.
Every human should read this book.
Okay.
On the planet.
Awesome. Thanks for being on. And I guess this almost feels mundane compared to the metaphysical workings of the entire pain nervous system and changing people's lives. But if anyone wants to follow you on anything.
Yeah, dope.
Is there anything else you want to plug, I guess, at the end of the show? It feels so small compared to what we've just been dealing with, but yeah,
totally. You can I'm on Facebook, Simon Carter Comedy, and Instagram, Mr. Simon Carter. I don't really post any pain related stuff, although I've been thinking about it lately, like, you know, if it might help in any way. But I post comedy stuff, and I'm going to start posting music stuff as well.
Yeah, man,
I think
definitely be showing off some. That's great content. And it's different every day. You're wailing on the trombone. That's
yeah.
Sick.
And I've been writing a lot for piano, so I might put up some of that too.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
So if you're into that, yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, thanks very much.
Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit a million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.